Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Trustees to talk virtual learning, opening plans, and call for quality schools. The virtual learning experience, school opening plans, and a call for quality schools are on the agenda for an Ector County ISD Board of Trustees workshop set for 6 p.m. today, October 13th, in the boardroom of the administration building at 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Lilia Nanez, Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, and the Executive Directors of Curriculum and Instruction, Jaime Miller and Lisa Wills, will present an overview of the virtual learning experience in elementary, middle, and high schools from the student and teacher perspective. On school opening plans, leadership will provide a report on data points ECISD is monitoring relating to the opening of school, current modes of learning, how those are working, adjustments being made, and the next steps will be discussed. A recent survey of ECISD families whose students are on a hybrid schedule, that is, alternating days at school and days at home, showed the majority of those families would like the chance to send their students to school 5 days per week, the district newsletter said. After reviewing community health data and having confidence in the effectiveness of the district's health and safety protocols, ECISD is offering that chance to hybrid students beginning on October 19th. This will be conducted in phases to allow the district to slowly adjust to having more students on campus. Board members also will discuss the call for quality schools. Supplemental agenda material said through the call for quality of schools, ECISD is seeking to identify high-capacity partner organizations for middle school turnaround to improve student outcomes, as well as partners with experience operating high-quality pre-kindergarten 3 models to serve 3-year-old students in ECISD for the 2021-22 school year, the material said. Senate Bill 1882 went into effect during 2017 to encourage districts to use partnerships to improve student outcomes by offering 2 new benefits. Approved partnerships may receive additional state funding for the partnership school, and schools with an unacceptable accountability rating are eligible to receive a 2-year exemption from specific accountability interventions. A call for quality schools is a requirement in the application to receive Senate Bill 1882 funds, the material stated. West Texas Food Bank announces donation. The West Texas Food Bank has announced the donation of a semi-truckload of food from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The donation is the second time the church has made such a large donation of food and funds to the food bank. The truck will be arriving at 8 a.m. Wednesday at the Odessa location. The food bank has been so fortunate to have had The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints missionaries volunteering at their facilities. They have been one of the very select small groups who have volunteered. They will be on hand to help with the pantry distribution and to help unload the truck. As a side note, the West Texas Food Bank will be changing its pantry hours starting October 13th. The Midland Facility Pantry will be open Tuesdays from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. The Odessa Facility Pantry will be open Wednesdays from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Those utilizing the Midland or Odessa Facility Pantries must be in line by 3 p.m. Patrons are reminded that they may only use the West Texas Food Bank pantries once a month, one visit to either facility once a month. People needing additional food assistance are encouraged to utilize its robust network of partner agencies and mobile outreaches. An information page about how to get help is available on the food bank website. The page includes a list of partner agencies throughout the 19 counties it serves, as well as mobile distribution locations. Website, https://wtxfoodbank.org/how-to-get-help. Award presentation. The second annual Justin Cunningham Law Enforcement Award presentation has been scheduled at 3 p.m. October 14th on the west side of the Ector County Courthouse. Honored recipients will be retired Odessa Police Department Deputy Chief Jesse Duarte and retired District Attorney Chief Investigator Joe Commander. The event is free and open to the public. Odessa American Opinion Page, Tuesday, October 13th. Our view. City continues to waste our tax dollars. The Point. Time for city officials to stop this ridiculous fight to hide crime information. Monday, a visiting state district judge ruled in favor of this newspaper in its continuing legal fight to force the city of Odessa to comply with Texas open records laws, and it's really a shame. Don't get us wrong, we are heartened that Judge Rodney Satterwhite on Monday denied a motion by the city's attorneys to dismiss our lawsuit because, they argued, the judge lacked jurisdiction in the matter, a technical way of saying he did not have the power to adjudicate the case. What we find disappointing is that the city may now choose to appeal the ruling to a higher court, further delaying the day when we are confident a judge will agree with us that the city does not have the right to pick and choose which public information the citizenry and members of the news media have a right to by law. And the sad reality of this legal mess is that the taxpayers, the very people entitled to this public information, will have to continue shelling out a tremendous amount of money to defend the indefensible. Already, the city has piled up at least $60,000 in legal fees. Not included in that amount are the billings from September and October, and it does not include the tens of thousands of dollars the city will likely incur to appeal Judge Satterwhite's ruling. Taxpayers should pay close attention to this. You, our readers, should know that we are fighting to ensure public reports, such as police reports and probable cause affidavits, readily accessible to all, remain that way. The Texas Freedom of Information Act makes this especially clear, yet the city has thrown up all sorts of hurdles that make obtaining that information much more difficult for us all. Too often, this newspaper has had to wait too long only to receive basic police reports containing so much blacked-out information. It's as if we were looking at some sensitive document released by an old Soviet bloc government. Regardless, we will continue our legal fight because we feel the stakes in a free and civil society are too high. The city of Odessa has started down the slippery slope of thinking they know what's best for us and what we should and should not know about all the happenings in our community, and that they do not get to keep from all of us what we are legally entitled to know. Odessa American Obituaries and Death Notices, Tuesday, October 13th. Epiminio Salinas Jr. Epiminio Salinas Jr., 74, of Edinburgh, Texas, passed away on October 6th in Odessa. Visitation and rosary schedule is as follows. Monday, October 12th, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., family and friends, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Drive-through viewing, Tuesday, October 13th, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Family and friends, 7 p.m. Rosary, St. Anthony's Catholic Church. The viewings on Monday and Tuesday will be held at Martinez Funeral Home. Masks must be worn at all times, and only 40 people are allowed at one time. Visitation will be conducted by rotation only. After viewing the body and exiting the building, re-entry will not be allowed. Please help the family maintain a safe environment for all who wish to pay their last respects. Only 50 people will be allowed at the rosary, which will be held in the chapel of St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Funeral services and mass will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, October 13th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, 1321 West Monahan Street, with Father Chavez officiating. The Wednesday service will be held outside, so all are welcome. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home. Epiminio was born in Edinburgh, Texas, to Epiminio Salinas Sr. and Inez Castaneda on December 1, 1945. He was married to Angelita Salinas on August 24, 1968, in Hereford, Texas. They were married 52 years. Epiminio is preceded in death by Epiminio Salinas Sr. and Inez Castaneda, parents. Gennaro Salinas, brother. Romanita Ortega, sister. Francisca Suarez, sister. Nena Garza, sister. Donato Salinas, brother. Albino Salinas, brother. Domingo Salinas, brother. Juan Salinas, brother. Gennaro Salinas II, brother. Jorge Salinas, beloved son. Joshua Solorzano, grandson. Brielle Miramontes, great-granddaughter. Epiminio is survived by Angelita Salinas, beloved wife. Eddie Salinas, son. Rosemary Dominguez, daughter. And Joey Dominguez, son-in-law. Pime Salinas, son. Lalo Salinas, brother. Lupe Castro, sister. Rodolfo Salinas, brother. Arturo Salinas, brother. Alfredo Salinas, brother. Nicholas Miramontes, grandson. And Elisa Miramontes, wife. Matthew Salinas, grandson. Samantha Miramontes, granddaughter. Lucas Salinas, grandson. Marcos Salinas, grandson. Abigail Rose Dominguez, granddaughter. Brooklyn Miramontes, great-granddaughter. Matthew Grayson Salinas, great-grandson. Blakely Miramontes, great-granddaughter. Lynette Salinas, daughter-in-law. To send flowers to the family or any other type of memorial, please contact Martinez Funeral Home. Death notices for Tuesday. Eddie Luna Lara. Eddie Luna Lara, 53, died Saturday, October 10th in Midland. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Walter M. Roberts, Jr., Kermit. Walter M. Roberts, Jr., 90, of Kermit, died Friday, October 9th in Kermit. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. October 13th at Trinity Christian Church in Kermit. Burial will follow at Kermit Cemetery. Pastor Gene Brown is officiating. Arrangements are by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Jorge Antonio Talamantes Dominguez. Jorge Antonio Talamantes Dominguez, 45, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 8th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, October 15th at Iglesia del Camino, 903 South County Road West, Odessa. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, the Odessa 2 section. Pastor Humberto Porras is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, October 11th, 2020. The opinion page. Opinion extra. Trump is letting down his side. If this is the most important election of our lifetimes, is it too much to ask the President of the United States to act like it? The President's most devoted backers talk about the election in apocalyptic terms. Michael Anton of Hillsdale College, author of the famous The Flight 93 Election essay in 2016, is the unsurpassed master of the genre. The stakes are undoubtedly huge. The policy swing from a President Donald Trump to a President Joe Biden alone would be massive, and progressives are talking about adding states for more Democratic Senate seats and packing the Supreme Court. Changes meant to shift the balance of American government enduringly into their direction. The warnings from the right about the potentially existential stakes of 2020 often inveigh against Republican pundits critical of Trump, yet never get around to urging any correction on the president's part. Indeed, even as Trump, too, talks in dire tones about the consequences of a Biden victory, he doesn't seem to have absorbed the message. If the existence of the country itself is on the ballot, why not prepare better for debates? Why not use Twitter exclusively for messages that advance his cause rather than detract from them? Why waste any time on petty animosities and distractions? Why not write down a health plan and a COVID-19 plan to blunt Biden's most potent issues? Why not, in short, do a few things that are uncomfortable or unnatural in the cause of, you know, saving the country from imminent political destruction? Of course, by this point, even asking these questions seems naive, although there were times in 2016 when Trump modulated his behavior enough to make a difference. Before the first Trump-Biden debate, journalist Ryan Lessa looked back at the 2016 Trump-Hillary clashes and made the case that Trump was relatively disciplined and kept coming back to his central themes. In his first clash with Biden, in contrast, out-of-control Trump blew himself up in the course of trying to demolish the former vice president. If Biden was calculatedly evasive and canned, Trump was profligate and underprepared, the way he almost always is. As my colleague Ramesh Panuru points out, in 2016, Trump fastened on underappreciated issues that voters cared about: trade, immigration, and PC. This time, he's focused on matters that obsess him, not the average voter. The sources of the Russia investigation should, as a matter of basic accountability, be established and disclosed. But no one who is not already a Trump voter cares about dubious investigatory decisions from 4 years ago. Nor is anyone as exercised as the president about critical things said about him on cable TV programs. Trump has waged a low-intensity campaign against masks for no good reason. By setting himself against them, largely on aesthetic grounds, Trump further opened himself up to charges that he doesn't take the virus seriously, even before his illness and the White House outbreak. Consider on the other side of the ledger how Trump, by and large, leads on the top issue of the election, the economy. Still, there has been no sustained case against Biden's economic program. On what should be his foremost advantage, Trump has turned the famous James Carville adage on its head: it's everything else, stupid. If the time eventually comes for recriminations after a defeat in November, not a certainty, even at this late date, Trump's hardcore supporters will have plenty of places to point: a once-in-a-century pandemic and an overwhelmingly hostile media, among other things. Be that as it may, Trump won't have been stabbed in the back. He will have committed a form of political harakiri because he found it easier and more enjoyable than exercising a modicum of self-discipline. If Trump loses, the story isn't going to be what was done to him rather than what he did to himself. Rich Lowry, Kingfish Features Syndicate. Letters to the Editor. Ballot count won't be a fast process. With the increase in the number of absentee ballots expected in 2020, tallying votes will take more time. We should realize it is likely there will be a delay in election results. Voters should not expect all election results to be called or announced on Election Day as in previous elections, and that's okay. A delayed result will, with an increased number of mailed ballots, means the system is working as it should to ensure the integrity of our election process. A surge in mailed ballots requires our election officials to adapt their ballot counting practices, and it is important for voters to be patient. A complete and accurate ballot count is more important than a fast ballot count. With the increase in absentee voting in 2020, it is essential that every vote is counted and every voter's voice is heard. We should all prepare for an election result to be announced after November 3rd. Donna Robertson, member of the League of Women Voters in Midland. Electoral College matters to Texas and the U.S. Calls to abolish the Electoral College and determine presidential election strictly by tabulation of popular vote clearly demonstrates lack of understanding that our United States of America is a federal republic of individual states formed on the ideals of democracy. Yes, the USA is a union of individual states under a federal government, and as clearly articulated in the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. The Electoral College, embedded in the framework of our Constitution, is another brilliant compromise on desire for individual states' rights and acknowledgement that collective security, prosperity, and justice is better provided and protected in a larger nation. When asked to ratify our Constitution, less populated individual states, birthed from the 13 original colonies, had no desire to subjugate their citizens to rule by a numerical population majority of another state. Therefore, the same formula for a state's representation in Congress, that House representation is based on population, while Senate on two each, determines each state's electoral college votes, the sum of the number of a state's congressional membership. The construct ensured any overwhelming numerical advantage of a more populous state was subject to leveling of the playing field, providing states with smaller populations relatively greater say and influence in governance by the federal government. Based on results of each individual state's popular vote, individual states determine how they elect electoral college representatives. Highly relevant today, this mythology helps buffer individual states from being overwhelmed by pockets of the United States with very large populations, thereby avoiding the threat that pockets of America impose governments on the entire nation. Championing states' rights, our Electoral College is a counter to a small number of states with very large populations dictating to all 50 states of America who should be their president, and dictating to a nation of dispersed and diverse states the morals and ethics by which they should be defined. Frank Kistner. Candidate letters. Trump is wrecking the oil patch. Republican oil people in West Texas look at what the current president has done for oil prices. In February 2018, he tweeted that oil was too high when it was $64.25 a barrel. Then in April 2019, he said oil is too high when the price was $51.50. Finally, oil hit a negative, minus $15 a barrel this year. Thanks, Trump. You may think he doesn't control the price of oil, but now you know he was aware of the potential consequences of COVID-19 in February and did nothing to lower the threat. People stopped flying. People stayed at home. Businesses were shuttered. The demand for oil plunged. Trump finally got the price down to where he likes it, and Permian Basin firms are going bankrupt and thousands are losing jobs. You were all so afraid President Obama would wreck the oil patch. Now look who did that. Oil has averaged 30% lower during Trump's first term than during Obama's first term, and 25% lower than during Obama's second term. Face the truth. President Donald Trump has been the worst president for West Texas we have ever seen. Keep voting for him, and you're killing your own livelihood. David Rosen. Have anti-Trumpers considered the consequences? I wonder how many anti-Trumpers planning not to vote, or even worse, to vote for Biden, have considered what will happen to the Republican Party and our country the next time the Republicans nominate another globalist or rhino for president and many normal Republicans decide to return the favor. This is assuming that there will still be a recognizable America after we've been subjected 4 years of Biden and his ilk. Budge McDonald. Carrasco's dedication is evident in his work. Over the last 10 years, I've had the opportunity to see Adrian Carrasco's leadership in action. Only one College Board candidate stands out as having been actively engaged. That person is Carrasco. His commitment to Midland College is evident in his work as a student, an alumni, recruitment coordinator, admissions director, and donor. The frequently visited Carrasco room stands as a testament to his family's financial support of the college. What I like about Adrian is that he doesn't make promises without a vision and a plan. He gives of his time joyfully. Adrian is very willing to work with others and will bring innovative ideas. As an advocate for Midland College, he has brought many low-income students through its doors. As a business owner, Adrian will bring business-minded ideas. His commitment to enhancing community partnerships and creating a robust workforce training program makes him the right person for the Midland College Board, Place 7. By my witness, I am qualified to tell you that I trust Adrian Carrasco to lead Midland College as a board member in Place 7. Please visit his website for more qualifications. Join me in voting for Adrian Carrasco. Luis D. Sanchez. Carrasco will be dedicated to MC's success. All January 1977, I was employed at Midland College as athletic director / basketball coach, later golf coach, for 40-plus years. Our presidents and board of trustees were always awesome. One of the student athletic training staff members when I arrived was Arnulfo Nuffy Carrasco, famous pain specialist, Dr. Carrasco. Following Nuffy were Arnaldo, Arlene, Arcelia, cheerleader, Abel, Alfredo, Adam, Adrian, and Aurelia. All of the young men worked in the athletic department. They were very integral parts of our success in MC, winning 12 national championships in 5 sports. Arcelia, Arlene, and Aurelia, and the young men all earned an associate degree and bachelor/master's degrees, but one. It is with respect and admiration I recommend Adrian Carrasco as a member of the MC Board of Trustees, Place 7. Adrian exemplifies the American dream of entrepreneurship as a local progressive young business owner. He recognizes the value of the community college's role in our society, promoting the opportunity of education for everyone. Midland needs a loyal MC graduate on the Board of Trustees. As a former student, employee, and current supporter, Adrian will be dedicated to MC's future progress. Delnora Paz.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, October 12th, 2020. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, "Biden Must Answer the Court Packing Question," by Hugh Hewitt, special to the Washington Post. The Supreme Court will be on center stage Monday with the start of Senate confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. The court is also now at the center of their presidential election, as many Democrats demand that if their party controls the White House and Senate after the election, the court be expanded to establish a liberal majority. If a Democrat of national prominence has stepped up to defend the court as an anchor of stability in a deeply divided country, I missed it. Court packing is now a major issue in the presidential campaign, because neither Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden nor his running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris, will say what they think about demands by their party's radical wing to expand the court. In the struggle for Senate control on November 3rd, the court packing question has also become a central concern. Senator Susan Collins, Republican Maine, has blasted her opponent, Democratic Sarah Gideon, for refusing to rule out court packing. Republican Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado is facing a similarly silent Democrat in John Hickenlooper. Before North Carolina Democratic nominee for Senate Cal Cunningham's campaign imploded over his extramarital activities, the court packing issue was central to Republican Senator Tom Tillis's re-election bid. In Iowa, the Democratic nominee Teresa Greenfield initially rejected the idea, but has since ducked the question, while Republican Senator Joni Ernst, a member of the Judiciary Committee, has forcefully rejected the idea. The Constitution does not fix the number of justices that serve on it, but the number settled at 9 in 1869 and has remained there ever since. In the previous 80 years, the court's makeup had changed half a dozen times, often for partisan gain. After the convulsions of the Civil War, America's national institutions needed credibility and stability. Leaving the Supreme Court intact with 9 justices helped achieve those aims. The court has gone through long periods of leaning one way or the other on issues of intense public interest. But the court's overall stability has made it a bastion of public confidence. Nearly 2/3 of Americans, 65%, recently told the Pew Research Center that the Supreme Court has the right amount of power. 56% view the Supreme Court as middle of the road rather than liberal or conservative. A whopping 70% of Americans view the court favorably. far and away the most esteemed of any national institution. Less than 20% of Americans trust the national government generally to do what's right, according to Pew. Only one president, Franklin D. Roosevelt, has dared to endanger the post-Civil War consensus on the court size by trying to cajole Congress into changing the number of justices. The Judicial Procedures Reform Bill of 1937 was Roosevelt's attempt to pack the court and fix the results of every dispute that wound up before it. FDR had reason to believe his power grab would work. He enjoyed huge Democratic majorities in both houses of Congress, yet the court-packing plan failed miserably, losing 70 to 20 in the Senate. Even by the president's own party, was repulsed by the idea of changing the court to rig the results of disputes. The idea was dead, 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 until this presidential cycle saw would-be Democratic nominees compete with each other for ever more radical proposals to attract their party's left edge. Expanding the Supreme Court is the most radical proposal of them all, and Biden refuses to say whether he's for it or against it. On Thursday, Biden told reporters, "You know my position on court packing," the day after the election. On Friday, when a reporter pressed Biden by asking, "Don't voters deserve to know?" Biden cut him off saying, "No, they don't deserve. I'm not going to play this game." By game, Biden seemed to mean President Donald Trump's attempt to force a Democratic answer to the question. What matters here isn't the result of this year's vote, but the stability of the rule of law. What matters is the court's ability to have the final say and to be regarded as above politics when it does so. That's why it could order President Richard M. Nixon to turn over secretly recorded tapes to Watergate investigators and see him quickly comply. Why it could order Southern schools to desegregate and have its order enforced across decades. Why it could decree only a few years ago that same-sex couples are entitled to marry, and see the ruling immediately acquire the durability of Marbury v. Madison, the 1803 decision establishing the court's right to rule on the constitutionality of federal statutes. Court packing is a threat to the Supreme Court, and thus to every American freedom, especially religious liberty, the Second Amendment, and property rights, and the separation of powers fundamental to our republic's durability. The Biden-Harris ticket and every Democratic Senate candidate should publicly condemn the idea or be rejected by the voters for failing a fundamental test of their suitability for office.
Guest views. Learn about the city issues by Peggy Dean. It has been my privilege to serve as your at-large city council member for the last 2 years. I am not seeking re-election, but after listening to many of the candidates that are running, I felt the need to explain some facts about the operations of City of Odessa. City responsibilities continue when there is a downturn in the economy and expand dramatically when we have our booms. I believe the city and the council have been very good stewards of city finances and have been conservative on spending. The main expenditures from our projected $99.8 million budget for general fund operations are $58.7 million for public safety, $6.7 million for parks, and $17 million for public works. General fund expenditures are made primarily from ad valorem tax revenue and sales tax income. Because the economy is erratic, it is impossible to fund all of the infrastructure projects out of current operations. It is imperative that the council be judicious about debt, but it is also a necessary component of cash flow planning. Just as citizens traditionally have to incur debt for big-ticket items, so does the city. The projects that are financed by debt are long-term projects, which will serve the citizens for many years. Debt is the way to stretch that cost over a number of years. You cannot build 2 blocks of road a year, or 1 mile of water and sewer lines, or 1/10 of a park, etc. you have to commit to the full project and pay it out over time. There is absolutely no way that the city can do major capital improvements without issuing debt from time to time. In mid-2019, the city issued a certificate of obligation to construct two new fire stations, build a new animal shelter, complete the police multipurpose building, do major renovations to Floyd Gwynn Park, extend Faudry Road, and various other curb and gutter improvements. These projects were picked as the most pressing from a list of $195 million in needs. We were fortunate that we actually got $93 million in funds for projects, but only incurred debt of $81 million because of the interest rates we were able to negotiate, which actually made our bonds sell at a premium. Your council did not have to raise the ad valorem rate from 2018 to 2019 to issue this debt. Long-term planning for the city council is essential, since half of the members potentially change every 2 years. We have procured master plans over the last 2 years for transportation, water and sewer, solid waste, and parks. These are critical to the planning for repairs and replacement over the next 20 years. Prioritizing these projects and their costs is one of the most important tasks of your city council. These master plans and the annual budgets are on the City of Odessa website for your review. The citizens should mandate that all candidates review these before undertaking the task of serving on city council. There will be additional debt that will need to be issued for these water and sewer and transportation projects sometime over the next several years. These projects will cost many millions of dollars, but will be necessary for lines and roads that are 50 to 70 years old. The debt will be paid for out of fees that are charged citizens and businesses for these services. A big misconception in this election is that the hotel-motel funds are taxes paid by our citizens and are being spent on development that is unnecessary. The hotel downtown was not built with city funds. It was built and paid for out of private citizens' money. The parking garage and the Ector Theater were built with the ODC funds and other sales tax revenues. The conference center was built out of hotel-motel funds. These funds come from the taxes charged to people renting hotel motel rooms in Odessa. These funds can only be used for tourism. Unless you have paid for a hotel room in Odessa over the last 5 to 6 years, you have not contributed any money to the conference center. This hotel and conference center are projected to bring many tourists and transients to Odessa, which will have a significant economic impact on our restaurants, retail, and quality of life issues. As a catalyst for revitalization of our downtown, this magnificent facility is a treasure for the citizens of Odessa, none of which was paid for by ad valorem taxes. Lastly, city council members get paid $20 per each council meeting that they attend. The workshops that happen on alternate Tuesdays from the council meetings are not paid meetings and are the most important of all meetings. It is in these sessions that the real detailed planning and questions are considered. All of these Tuesday meetings are open to the public, and the videos of these meetings for several years are on the city website, odessa-tx.gov. It is not necessary to even leave your home to stay updated on the actions of your council and the decisions that are being made on your behalf. I believe that it is important that you watch these videos because you have elected your council to represent you. This is the main way that you can communicate with your city council if you have issues of concern. Transparency is there for every meeting. The time commitment for city council has been between 20 and 25 hours per week for me. This includes reading, attending meetings, representing the council on at least 5 boards, communicating with citizens, attending functions throughout the city, and being on task force committees for special projects. We should be sure that all candidates are willing to make that commitment when we are listening to their plans for our city. I am honored to work with the existing council and have witnessed their deep commitment to our city. I am available to answer any other questions you might have about City Council. 432-559-6774. Peggy Dean is the at-large City Council member. Let's end domestic violence by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This provides our country with a chance to mourn for those who have lost their lives due to domestic violence, support survivors, and push resources to anyone who needs them. We don't take kindly to domestic violence here in Texas. Thankfully, there's a new resource in the fight against domestic violence in the Lone Star State called the Texas Protective Order Registry. The Texas Protective Order Registry goes live statewide on October 15th, and that development means big problems for repeat offenders of domestic violence. I worked in the Texas legislature to pass Monica's Law to establish the Texas Protective Order Registry, which is an online, searchable, and public database listing protective orders issued by Texas courts as a result of domestic violence after a due process hearing. The idea for Monica's Law resulted from a tragedy that occurred in Odessa in 2015 when Monica Deming, a 32-year-old mother, was shot in her home by an abusive ex-boyfriend. Monica and her family were unaware that her killer had two other previous protective orders against him that he had easily been able to hide. Domestic violence protective orders have historically been easy for abusers to conceal because the protective orders were only registered in the community where they were issued. While working with Monica's family to change Texas law, our aim was to make vital court records about domestic violence perpetrators more accessible so that abusers can't hide their history of violence from new victims, law enforcement, or Texas courts. The Texas Protective Order Registry accomplishes that goal and could serve as a model for other states to follow in their quests to reduce domestic violence. Monica's Law sadly cannot take back the domestic violence tragedies that have claimed too many lives, but now the memory of Monica and all other victims can live on in this Texas Protective Order Registry that will help prevent future senseless deaths from domestic violence. The Texas Protective Order Registry can be viewed at www.txcouRTS.gov/judicial-data-protective-order-registry. That's www.txcourts.gov/judicial-data-protective-order-registry. October is about remembering people like Monica, whose life was cut short by domestic violence. It is also about spreading awareness, understanding, and hope. Incidents of domestic violence are on the rise in 2020. If you are a victim, don't be silent. There are resources like those provided by the wonderful team at the Crisis Center of West Texas that can help you and keep you safe. We are all in this together. If you are among the many Texans who need help or just need someone to talk to, please reach out to the Crisis Center of West Texas at 432-333-2527 or the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. God Bless Texas. Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. Letter to the editor. Return to civility, charity needed. Given the deep divisions and lack of civility toward one another, is it any surprise that a hate group tried to kidnap the governor of Michigan and start another civil war? I remember in late 2000 when the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute hosted a distinguished lecture on domestic terrorism. At that time, there had been over 800 homegrown hate groups identified by law enforcement. Whenever I hear about activities that just happened in Michigan, I am reminded of what Robert Gates, then a professor at Texas A&M, said. It is not a matter of if, but a matter of when a major terrorist attack will occur on American soil, and how we respond will define the American character. 11 months later, we experienced 9/11 and responded with the longest war in American history, but also with a decline in our interactions with one another, a disbelief in the veracity of our elected leaders, a government at all levels that is becoming more and more dysfunctional, a media that no longer reports the news but spouts opinions with cherry-picked sound bites, an ever-expanding list of issues that seem to have no answers, and now ever-expanding riots in the streets. Is this the new American character? It makes me wonder how many new hate groups have been created. Have we reached a tipping point? I pray not, but it is time for each of us to take action to demand a return to civility and charity toward one another. Go, vote your conviction, but then, regardless of the winner, demand a coming together, or the hate will consume us all. Charles Cotton, Odessa.
What's Crackin' on Heel Cracking Solutions? To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Dr. Roach writes, many readers wrote in after a recent column on heel cracking to tell me what worked for them. The most popular were urea-based and ammonium lactate creams. A wound care nurse emphasized the need for a podiatry referral, particularly in diabetic patients. People who recommended steroid creams may have had a component of eczema, and many wrote in that keeping the callus smaller with an emery board or pumice stone kept it from cracking. As always, I appreciate readers writing in with their own experiences. Dr. Roach regrets that he is unable to answer individual letters, but will incorporate them in the column whenever possible. Readers may email questions to yourgoodhealth at med.cornell.edu. Man contemplates adopting the stepdaughter he adores. Dear Abby, I'm thinking about asking my stepdaughter, Gwen, 37 years old, with a husband and 3 kids, if she would like me to adopt her. I married her mother when Gwen was 2. We divorced when she was 8 or 9, so we were out of contact for about 25 years. Gwen really dislikes her father. Her mother and I have patched things up, so much so that we've been on a couple of vacations together. Gwen has been along for both. We have a special bond that goes back to the first time I met her. She was a terror, and her mother, grandmother, and the rest of her family had basically given up on her. But we clicked. I was patient with her, and we became close. When we were together a few weeks ago on vacation, she asked if I wanted to come to Colorado, which is halfway across the country from where I live, for her daughter's 3rd birthday party. I'm going. I love her dearly and always have. I missed her terribly during the years her mother and I barely communicated. I was able to see my kids, but not her. Now I feel that closeness again, and I want to officially adopt her, as I should have back when she was 2. What do you think, Abby? Loving her in Louisiana. Dear Loving Her, do not make such an important decision on impulse. Be prudent and let this renewed relationship with your ex and her daughter play out a while longer before making any decisions. Then, if you still feel the same, talk to your ex about what you have in mind. If she reacts positively, discuss it with Gwen. But I urge you to use caution because your ex may consider herself and her daughter to be a package deal and expect you to adopt her too. It goes without saying that this should be discussed with your lawyer, because the fact that Gwen still has a father may complicate matters. Dear Abby, the sisters in my family are very close. Today, we live independently and alone in different cities. After we retire, three of the four of us plan to live together in a new location. Our dilemma? The fourth sister marches to a different drummer. Our lifestyles are very different. Completely opposite, in fact. We love her and enjoy being with her at family gatherings and doing things together. Yet we feel strongly that because she has little initiative and a dependent personality, she shouldn't live with us, so we haven't included her in our plans. We know the news will upset her, and we don't want to cause hurt feelings, but we feel strongly about this. We have tried to figure out how we could make it work, but always end up knowing it won't. The only option we can think of would be that she could move to wherever we are and find a place of her own, but we're not sure she has the means to make it happen. Can you help us figure out the most compassionate way to share the news with her? Forward thinking. Dear Forward Thinking, the most compassionate way to venture into this minefield would be to ask your sister what her plans are once she retires. If she says she plans to live with you, she should be told it won't happen and why, so she can make other arrangements for herself. While the conversation may not be pleasant, it is necessary, and it should take place sooner rather than later.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Libra and a moon in Leo until 12:56 a.m., when the moon enters Virgo. Happy birthday for Tuesday, October 13, 2020. Success-oriented and very funny, you're destined to have much success this year. Relax more and take a break. The pandemic gives that to you, and you'll do even better. Intense work is the theme of your 2021. If single, you know the instant you see someone, and it happens this June. If attached, your union is passionate, sweet, and loving. Don't forget the fun. Aquarius lights your fire. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Sunlight carries health-giving and antiseptic properties. Be aware of how the quality of light in your workplace is affecting you and adjust it until it's ideal. You'll be amazed at how proper lighting enhances your well-being. Tonight, meditate by the light of a favorite lamp. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Develop your creative potential. Purchase an attractive journal and matching pen to record your ideas. They're likely to be too good to let them fall by the wayside. Artistic endeavors of all kinds will flourish today. Tonight, be patient. Success comes. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Special projects can lead to a new career emphasis. You'll play host to visitors. Home improvements can be planned. Experiment with bold, bright colors. Children have much to teach you and can be a catalyst for change. Tonight, a new competitive quality develops. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Today promises a variety of important emails and phone calls. You will be juggling several projects and appointments simultaneously. Confirm plans with others to avoid confusion, and much is accomplished. Tonight, your great capacity for problem-solving is in evidence. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. You will be able to make purchases you've longed for, and it will be possible to use money to generate true enjoyment. Just be cautious about overextending yourself. Compare prices and remember to budget. Tonight, your famous love for luxury is satiated. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. You'll be enthused and motivated. Today will conclude on a very upbeat note. Many worthwhile projects will, finally, be in the works. Be versatile and creative in applying your job skills. Your earning ability will blossom. Tonight, a great sigh of relief. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Answers and inspiration come from within now. New appreciation of the peace and freedom of solitude develops today. Perform an anonymous act of kindness, and a deep sense of satisfaction comes. Tonight, you would benefit from a change of scene. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 4 stars. Today, find your physical vitality improving. Depression lifts, and your faith helps you carry plans forward. Helpful guidance comes from friends. It's a good time to seek an opinion or request advice. Tonight, a conversation can be very significant. Listen closely. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Today is all about interaction with others. Remember the value of networking and improving your people skills. Maintain a balance between your personal and professional life. Being well-rounded will better prepare you to reach your goals. Tonight, surround yourself with loving energies. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 3 stars. Penetrating yet cautious, a flair for business and a yearning for practical achievement motivate you. A plan for growth develops. Keep your faith strong, but act independently. Relationships between grandparents and grandchildren can be mutually enjoyable. Tonight, contact a foreign friend. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 4 stars. Others tend to be generous if you seek financial advice or assistance. Your sensitivity and thoughtfulness win the loyalty of another. A message from a loved one who has passed on may comfort you. Tonight, an early night of restful sleep. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 1 star. Others have a different viewpoint regarding love. Communicate. You will prevail if you respect the perspectives of those you are intimate with. There is much exploring and probing in progress. Tonight, a wonderful dinner date with a loved one. Born today, comedian Lenny Bruce, 1925, singer Paul Simon, 1941, comedian Sacha Baron Cohen, 1971.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.